Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11 is the one we call the roll call of faith. In this chapter, the writer is reminding his readers of the accomplishments of a number of characters from the Old Testament era. In the space of 40 verses, he recounted the exploits of 14 men by name and countless others who are not called by name. It is a moving and inspirational recollection of some of the most faithful men in the biblical record. Anyone who has read Scripture knows that there were also many women whose faith in God was noteworthy. For reasons that only God knows, only two women are called by name in this great list. One of these is Rahab, who is mentioned in Matthew's genealogy of the Lord as an ancestor of David. The other woman named in Hebrews chapter 11 is Sarah, the wife of Abraham. As we continue our series on 12 extraordinary women, we turn our attention to the woman who was, for all intents and purposes, the mother of the Hebrew race. She was an exceptional woman in some respects, and very much as we might generally expect a woman to be in others. She had had commendable attributes as well as flaws that are common to all of us. Since God saw fit to enshrine her in the roll call of faith, then she is a woman well worth our time and effort to study her life and qualities. So for a few moments this morning, we will consider a woman about whom it may be said, she hoped against hope. We first read of Sarah in Genesis chapter 11, verses 27 to 32. In this place, Moses recorded the origins of Abraham and Sarah. And here the scripture says, "Now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth, Ur of the Chaldeans. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. And they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." Now there are several interesting aspects to the beginning of the story of Abraham and Sarah. The first is that they were Chaldeans. The ancient city of Ur was located in the region where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers converge. The region through which these two rivers flow is called Mesopotamia, or the land between the rivers. It is part of what scholars call the Fertile Crescent, and is considered to be the birthplace of civilization. Today, the site of ancient Ur and much of the region we call Mesopotamia is part of the nation of Iraq. The Chaldeans were the direct ancestors of the Babylonians and the indirect ancestors of the Iraqi people of today. We notice that Sarah is called Sarai in this section of Scripture. Sarai meant my princess. Her name was changed by God to Sarah, which means simply princess, when the Lord appeared to Abram in Genesis chapter 17. It was at this time that God told Abraham that a son would be born to Sarah in 1 year's time. Some have speculated that Sarah must have been something of a prima donna because of her name and because she was an incredibly beautiful woman, and we'll discuss that subject in just a moment. This seems, of course, to be an unfair assessment of her on at least two counts. First, Sarah hardly played the role of a princess, as we generally define it today. She did not pout and manipulate or demand to have her own way. On the contrary, she seems to have been more of a stand-by-your-man kind of woman than a diva. Secondly, she is held up as an example in the Scriptures of what a godly wife should be. She is called by name in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 11 as a person of faith, and is cited by Peter in 1 Peter 3 and verse 5 and 6 as a woman who hoped in God and was submissive to her husband. We notice also that Abraham and Sarah were already advanced in years when we first read about them in Scripture. From Genesis 17, verses 1 through 17, we learn that Sarah was 10 years younger than Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12 and verse 4, we discover that Abraham was 75 years old when he took Sarah and Lot and left Haran for Canaan. This means that Sarah was 65 years old as they began this journey. She was already well past her childbearing years, even in that time when people lived much longer than they do today. This factor is significant because Sarah was called upon to turn her world upside down at a time when she might have reasonably been expected to want nothing more than to live quietly the rest of her days. As we mentioned a moment ago, Sarah is one of only two women who are called by name in Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews 11 and verse 11, the writer says of her, "By faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised." Now, the writer uses the same introduction for Sarah, the words "by faith," that he does for Abel and Enoch and Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses in this record. This means that Sarah was a woman of great faith, just as these men were. When we go back to Genesis, however, we may wonder how this could have been the case. In Genesis 18, verses 9 to 15, the record tells us of Sarah's reaction when the Lord promised that she would have a son in 1 year's time. "Then they said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' And he said, 'There in the tent.' He said, 'I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son.' And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And the Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I indeed bear a child when I am old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son.' Sarah denied it, however, saying, 'I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" Now, Sarah's reaction here doesn't seem to be one of great faith, does it? However, it is not all that different from Abraham's reaction, which is recorded in Genesis 17, verses 15 through 19. On that occasion, God told Abraham that his heir would be a son born to Sarah. Abraham laughed at this notion, verse 17, reminding God that Sarah would be 90 years old at the time of his birth, if it came to pass. Abraham tried to convince God that to let Ishmael, be the son of promise, but God refused. So obviously, Abraham had the same feeling of uncertainty as Sarah did, yet we do not question that Abraham was a man of great faith, do we? And neither should we question Sarah's faith, because the scriptures do not question it either. Even the matter of trying to satisfy God's promise by means of her handmaid Hagar does not diminish our views of Sarah's faith. God made his first promise to Abraham when Abraham was 75 years old. For 10 years, Sarah waited for God to fulfill his promise, Genesis 16 and verse 3. It was only after waiting these 10 years that Sarah took matters into her own hands. If Sarah is guilty for a lack of faith in giving Hagar to Abraham, then Abraham is guilty as well. As the head of his household, it was his responsibility to lead in God's ways. Like Adam before him, if Abraham had done what he knew God wanted him to do, the incident with Hagar and the troubles that have followed it would never have occurred. The bottom line on the matter of faith is that one need not be perfect in order to be a person of faith. Sometimes faith wavers. Sometimes faith fails. But a person of faith never gives in to these setbacks. A person of faith gets up from where he has fallen and continues to seek the Lord. This is what Sarah did, and this is why she is held up to us as a woman of faith. We mentioned Sarah's beauty a little earlier in our discussion, and we want to come back to that at this time. Twice in the record of Abraham and Sarah, her great beauty led powerful rulers to take her as a wife. The first occasion is recorded in Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 through 20. Abraham and Sarah went down to Egypt because of a famine in the land of Canaan. As they traveled, Abraham instructed Sarah to say that she was his sister, because he feared the Egyptians would kill him because of her great beauty and take her for a wife. Now, Sarah was 65 years old at this time, and she must have been stunningly beautiful, because as soon as the Egyptians saw her, they told Pharaoh, and he sent gifts to Abraham so he could take her as a wife. The second incident occurred some years later when Abraham and Sarah lived near Gerar. In Genesis 20, verses 1 through 18, Abimelech, the king of Gerar, saw how beautiful Sarah was and sent to take her as a wife. In this instance, as in the previous one, God prevented these men from violating Sarah and warned them not to touch her and to return her to her husband. Both Pharaoh and Abimelech were innocent in what they had done and were spared any punishment from God. Surprisingly, Abraham was also spared punishment, even though he lied on both occasions. Here we see that Sarah did not do what some beautiful women do. She did not try to use her great beauty to manipulate men. Instead, she stood by her husband and supported him in doing what he thought was best. She fulfilled the role of a suitable helper in every respect all the days of her life. It was, in fact, this quality that made her the most beautiful. And it is this submissive spirit that Peter praised as he used her as an example for Christian wives. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, Peter said, "In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not merely be external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear." How interesting that perhaps the most physically beautiful woman who ever lived is remembered for the beauty of her gentle and quiet spirit, and she is held up as an example because she was submissive to her husband. Sarah was by no means a second-class citizen in her household. She was not a doormat. She was strong and sometimes outspoken. But she was a godly woman who fulfilled God's expectations for a wife, and especially for the wife of an important man like Abraham. Sarah's life teaches us that faithfulness and obedience to God's will are the true marks of beauty. They are the qualities by which we have hope in the Lord. Whether ladies or men this morning, what are the marks of your beauty? Are they merely external? Or are they the hidden person of the heart who is submissive to God's will? The reason why we remember Sarah today, the reason why Sarah is an example for women still today, all these thousands of years after her life, is because she was a woman of beauty on the inside as well as the outside. And it was that internal character of beauty that is blessed by God, and it makes her an example for women to follow today. Thank you for listening this morning. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.